Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
How's it going, everybody? This is the Famous Dead People podcast, the only podcast that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I'm your host, Jared Berenstein. Today on the show, we have the man behind 2001, The Shining, Full Metal Jacket, filmmaker Stanley Kubrick, and the author of the book Jane Eyre, writer and poet Charlotte Bronte. Fascinating talk. Before we get to the episode, guys, if you are listening to this on Wednesday, January 30th, 2019, that means that tomorrow is the last Junior Varsity show of all time. That's right, my improv team, Junior Varsity, is retiring after 12 years, but we have one show left if you're listening to this the day that this episode comes out, and it is tomorrow, Thursday, January 31st, 2019 at 7 p.m. at the Magnet Theater. So if you want to come see us one last time, you got to come to the Magnet Theater tomorrow, Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. Don't forget that you can check out the freshest episodes of Famous Dead People every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Hit us up at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org. Buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique, and hit up my website for all the latest and the greatest. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy Charlotte Bronte and Stanley Kubrick only on Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People. It's time.
Famous Dead People.
Time to start the show.
Famous Dead People.
Famous Dead People. Oh, you know,
famous dead people,
famous dead people,
famous
stories stuck in their heads.
You're
gonna hear awful from even though all these people are dead.
My guests in the studio today on Famous Dead People are 19th century English novelist and poet known for such works as Jane Eyre, Charlotte Bronte.
Hello.
And 20th century American film director and screenwriter known for such works as 2001 and The Shining, Stanley Kubrick.
Hey, everybody. It's your friends, Stanley Kubrick.
Mr. Kubrick, Ms. Bronte, thank you so much for joining us here on Famous Dead People.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
So let's start off with Mr. Kubrick, if I may. So
please call me Stanley.
Stanley. Absolutely. I love that familiarity, my man. So you've had such an incredible film career, Clockwork Orange, 2001, The Shining, Spartacus, Dr. Strangelove, Full Metal Jacket. You're known for demanding dozens of takes of each shot, whereas most directors are generally fine with like five or six, depending. I'd like to know, of all your films, and so many of them are held in highest regard, were there any moments on your films or shots where you got it done in one? Where you just had the magic on the first take and you're like, you know what? Nothing else. We don't need anything else. Nothing else matters.
Yeah. Well, just to backtrack a little bit, it's just that,
Oh, Daniel, I've seen this before.
What?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. What was that, Charlotte?
I've seen this before. He's got the death rattle in him.
No. I think he's just maybe a little flustered.
I don't know. This is foreboding to me.
I understand, Charlotte Bronte. You had a lot of death in your life, but
yes, it's loads of it.
It's not as precarious of a time that we're living
fine.
Right now.
Stanley's so fine.
I'm sure he's gonna be fine.
Just my Lyft driver. He was talking so much,
mm-hmm.
He got me all confused with the words he was throwing out.
I hate a chatty Lyft driver.
So chatty.
What about you, Charlotte? Do you have any opinions about that?
A chatty Lyft driver. Well,
yeah.
All I can say about that is it's just lovely to have any friend in the world.
See, that's a really good point. All right, so just for the sake of the survey, Charlotte Bronte, if you got her in your Lyft, she loves a chatty. Jared does not like a chatty. Stanley
Silence,
Kubrick
please.
Does
just
not,
like you gotta treat
like
you gotta treat the car like it's a small movie theater. Everyone, you quiet down. You drink your
like
sodas.
That.
You eat your popcorns.
Mm-hmm.
You kick back. You sing that little song to yourself. Let's go to the
movies.
Let's go to the movies.
Stanley Kubrick, did you like singing that song along with the?
Yeah, and that's kind of going back to your question. That's what it was about.
Mm.
Often I would forget to sing that song right before the takes, and that's why I would have to do it. Oh, it was like my good luck charms.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
So like it was what I would sing that, and that's when I knew this was the takes.
So, sorry.
I was just going to share my good luck charm.
Oh, you had something that you would do before you would write, maybe, Charlotte Bronte?
Yes, we would. Every time I would sit down for any sort of creative venture, I would pray to the Lord that if I died and he took me in that moment, that I would have a righteous death, and that I would be seated by him.
Oh man, this is, I had no idea that all of the sudden and I'll just like the dozens of people who were close to you who died prematurely had such a morbid effect on you. Of course it would, though.
That's an insane thing to say. Just, well, why would it not affect me?
Well, you know the expression, the same hot water
is the same that you should not drink.
That's not the expression.
That's not the expression. I put that sign on all the craft tables.
The expression goes, the same hot water that softens the noodle hardens the egg.
And so, don't ingest this hot water. It hurts.
You can tack that on at the end if you like. But the point being that some people going through what you went through, and we'll get more into this. I think the first question I have for you is about this. We'll get more into this, but you know, it could have gone either way. It could have made you a more flippant and positive person, or maybe had the effect that it currently has on you of making you a little bit more scared.
Your question,
yes, about the take that you got it in one, Kubrick.
It's something my dad used to always tell me. He's like, Stanley. Actually, he would sometimes say Mr. Kubrick.
Your dad used to call you Mr. Kubrick.
You can call me Stanley.
Interesting.
Perfection is what makes perfect.
Perfection is what makes perfect. That is a...
And then he would always add...
How poignant.
Then he would always add, don't drink the hot water, Stanley.
Don't drink the hot water.
Yeah.
I don't know what this weird obsession that your dad had with beverages that were slightly too hot to be comfortable.
You know, it's just, he's being a dad. He's looking out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess...
I just wanted to clarify something that you said earlier. So, you would sing the Let's Go to the Movie song before every one of your takes.
Every one of the takes.
And if you didn't sing it, then you knew you had to redo that take.
I had to redo that take.
Okay. And are you saying that that's the reason why you ended up doing so
multiple
many
takes? I would forget a lot to do that. You know, here's the thing about movies, and a lot of people don't know this about movies, but there's a lot of stuff going on in movies, you know?
Yeah.
And as, as the king of the movies is what, as you know, how that's how I refer to myself. On the stage, I'm the king of the movies.
King of the movies.
And, I forgot what I was talking about. Sorry, that Lyft driver really
Stanley
threw
Kubrick.
Me for a loop. That, okay.
I'm telling you, you should be careful.
His name is Rodney. His name is Rodney, and he was telling me, he's like, hey, is this your first time in Brooklyn? And I was like, yes, my first time anywhere.
Ooh.
You know, as a joke, because, you know, I really wanted to shut him down.
That's that famous Kubrick wit right there.
I wanted to shut him down.
So if I had been in your position, and, you know, it can't be a good take unless I sing the Let's Go Out to the Movie song.
Let's Go Out to the Movies.
And I frequently forget to sing the Let's Go Out to the Movie song.
It's just so much
just
going on.
Hired somebody to make sure that I sang the Let's Go Out to the Movie song before each take.
You can't.
Maybe a local clergyman.
Maybe a priest, if you will.
Yeah, I guess I could have hired a priest to come. I did hire a priest to come in always to bless the movie set. That was always like
good.
The thing to do.
I was like,
yeah, make sure to bless this. And, you know, they would come in, they would do, like, a little prayers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you get it in one, Kubrick? That's what we want to know.
So, okay. So
what shot from what?
I have a joke.
Oh, Charlotte Bronte's got a joke. Let's hear it.
Yes. You didn't get the answer to this question in one, did you?
You certainly did not. You're having a lot of different takes here.
I'd love to be in a shared car service with you, Shara, right now.
I would love that.
Yeah, we sit there in silence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an area where I feel like the two of you might not gel, because Charlotte obviously prefers a talker.
I'd love a friend,
Yeah, just anybody to
just
bounce ideas
off. Just a friend to make
off.
It through the night.
Not me, I like silence. Yeah. I treat my life like it's a movie theater.
Stanley Kubrick. Let's get into it. Clockwork Orange, 2001, The Shining, Spartacus, Dr. Strangelove, Full Metal Jacket. Did any of the shots, any of the famous scenes from these movies, did you get it in one? Did you ever shoot one?
Yes, of course. Right. Yeah, Clockwork Orange.
Ooh, Clockwork Orange.
Right when the credits, you know, it says on the screen, A Clockwork's Orange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. One take.
Wait, you're saying the end credits?
Mm-hmm.
Or the very
at the very end,
end
when
of the
I
movie.
Have the title come up, Clockwork Orange, one take.
Are you saying Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange. The famous books, Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange. Yeah, yeah. He's basically getting it right.
Yeah, from Anthony Burgess.
Yeah, I'm not hearing any problem. I'm not hearing any issue there.
It must
be my strong New York's accent.
Oh.
So you're saying that the only thing that you ever filmed that you got in one was the title card for the movie, The Clockwork Orange, and not even the main title card, the one at the end of the movie.
The end card, yeah, the first one was real tricky. It was real windy that day.
You had to do a lot of different things there.
Because back in the day, not like today where everything's CGI, mm-hmm. When I did it, I used to hire people like the priest to come mm-hmm. bless, and then I would reach out to all the orphanages and be like, can I borrow some of your young boys and your young children and your young girls? I need them to hold up letters.
Terrible.
You need them to hold up letters mm-hmm. for the credits?
For the credits. It would hold up each letter of the movie title. This for Clockwork Orange, I remember, is real blustery. Full Metal Jacket. Oh, that was a sad one. We lost the full orphanage.
You lost a whole bunch of orphanages. Oh, Full Metal Jacket.
Full
you
orphanage. Lost. They,
holding up letters for the credits for Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, it's just it was windy. Also, it was rain. It was monsoon season. And,
why did you put those children in danger?
Well, you gotta put up letters. You know this.
You gotta do it for the arts.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly don't have orphan children holding all the letters
well,
from
no,
my
you
book.
Well, no, you have the page to do
yes,
that.
I have the
but
page.
In cinema.
Yeah. In cinema, the canvas is the world.
Yeah. So you
as
need.
As king, I suppose I'll defer.
Yeah. Yes, of course. It's, you know, once I'm on stage, you can't really say no to the king.
Can't say no to the king. Let's move over to Charlotte Bronte for just a moment. Hello. So you are obviously one of the three Bronte sisters.
Well, there were dozens of us.
Well, yes. But the ones that ended up being notable writers,
yes.
You know, there were the three of you.
Yes.
There were six Bronte children total, though. And of the six of you, all of you died of tuberculosis or similar respiratory illnesses. Two as children, three in the early 30s, and you at 38. You were the longest surviving Bronte.
Well, I was the longest surviving Bronte, but there were dozens of us.
Oh, there were more than that?
There were dozens.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's a real shame.
One Bronte child for every take that Stanley Kubrick would require for one of his films.
Almost half the alphabet your family could have held up. If I mm-hmm. was to make a movie title with 12 letters, your family could have helped out.
No, we couldn't have held up letters. It was very frail.
Now, here's the thing. Like, a lot of the Brontes died from tuberculosis.
No.
What happened?
No, I don't know why people say that. They just assume, I suppose, because they died with blood in their mouths that they were suffering from tuberculosis. Oh, we called it consumption.
Consumption, of course.
So I think there was a, you know, Lost in Translation, which is one of your movies, right?
No, it's not.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Anyway.
But consumption, that reminds me of my driver. He was eating a hoagie in the front seat and he kept telling me about it.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, that's really closer to the truth.
Yeah.
That's closer to the truth.
Ooh, tell us about it.
Well, we were a circus family, which most people don't think about because we were so small and shy about it.
But interesting.
We would eat things for people to watch. And
okay.
Some of the things we ate were very dangerous. And I was the only one with a brave enough stomach to handle most of it.
Your stomach was so brave.
My stomach was very brave.
All the other stomachs were too scared.
They were too scared. Well, it's very scary. You know, we'd eat things like brooms and, you know, hot pokers.
Oh, yeah. I once gave some of the orphans nails to eat.
Well, oh, really?
Some of them may
have
been
some
used
nails
to
and some hot water.
Stanley Kubrick, why did you have? I mean, it's cruel enough that you're making these orphans hold up the letters so people know what
cruel.
Movie they're watching.
Cruels. I was
why
giving them
you,
a job.
Why didn't you
real
feed
honor.
Them nails, Stanley Kubrick?
It was just, you know, the world is tough.
Okay.
They're orphans, and I needed to, you know, I needed
it was
to
a learning
get,
experience.
Yeah, and
saying.
Also, like, I didn't want anybody holding up the letters and not meaning it. You know, you do a movie like 2001.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a comedy.
No.
So
no,
if you're holding
right.
up letters,
I didn't laugh once during that entire picture.
Yeah. Well, it's not. I keep telling people. A lot of people's like, "This is a comedy."
This,
I'm like,
this is hilarious.
Yeah,
all those early monkey men fighting each other. Ah, that is great. All the screaming and stuff like that. But anyway, so. I find this very interesting, Charlotte Bronte, because from what I read on your Wikipedia, it seems like your family was a little bit more religious. I believe your father worked for the church, but you're saying that you guys were actually circus performers and that your act was eating various things.
Well, it was a very religious circus. It was all
ooh,
about
religious circus. Okay.
Yes, it was about the cardinal sin of gluttony.
So this was a
lesson to
it's
children.
A metaphor.
It was don't eat too much, children. watch these wicked children eating.
Interesting.
So, you know, we would eat horrible things.
You said a hot poker was one of them, right?
That was a hit.
That was a hit, the hot poker?
We did that one loads of times.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, they loved... Well, the crowds loved it. I actually think it had the opposite effect. You know, people were encouraged to eat poker because
you made it
look great.
Oh, then people, instead of being swayed by this, they were like, maybe I could be a famous hot poker eater one day.
Sure, until we started dying.
Oh,
we had the same problem after The Shining.
After The Shining?
After The Shining, people kept... Nobody knocked on doors anymore. They just took axes to doors. And that's how they introduced themselves.
Because Jack Nicholson made it look so cool.
And I told him, you know that scene took 3 years to film.
3 years to film that one scene?
I couldn't remember that jingle for so long.
The let's go out to the movie.
Let's go out to the movie. Wow. It was cold. We filmed on location.
Here's the thing. Famously, Jack Nicholson improvised that line, "Here comes Johnny," when he chops his way through the door.
Well, that's because it was so long that he had changed his name halfway through filming the movie. Because, you know, as an actor, he was like, no, I don't want to be Jack anymore. I want to be Johnny. And so we're like, okay.
Ooh, okay. And so the filming of the movie had a real psychological effect on him.
Yeah.
So did he say other things, like in the 3 years that you were filming just that one shot? Did he say other things when he poked his head in through the door?
Yeah, there was a lot. There was one time where he was like, roar, I'm a T-Rex now. And I always kept that one because, you know, it was honest. It was true to character.
Where in the 3 years that you were filming this one shot?
It was the first take.
That was the first thing. So you're like, you know what?
It was the first thing out of his mouth.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I was like,
let's just get a couple more for safety.
Yeah. Well, I didn't sing the song. I didn't sing the jingles. I was like,
I see.
I was like, I want to curse this film.
Gotcha.
Everyone in this film has to continue to go on to be perfect stars.
Anything else? Any other famous Jack Nicholson lines when he was coming through
the door? Yeah, there was a couple. There was one where he was just like, 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock, 5, 6. He was just doing Happy Days theme for a little bit, and that was cute.
How far along in the Happy Days
second
theme
take?
Did you get?
That was immediately.
I thought. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh no!
I thought that the Happy Days theme song was Mondays, Tuesdays, Happy Days, not listing times of the day.
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
Well, you know, I think a lot. Jack was going through. I think he was probably going through a divorce. Also, he was looking at it. He was really big into watches.
We're just talking about, also Charlotte Bronte, we're talking about the theme that we know from syndication. But when it was originally being broadcast, there were a lot of different Happy Days songs.
Oh, well, I think
there was
during
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock rock, a.k.a. Happy Days.
That was one of them. Yeah. I think, you know, again, the scene took so long to film that the theme song may have changed.
Oh,
and
it changed so many times. Yeah. Same thing happened with Dawson's Creek. They changed the intro music for one of the seasons. And I, of course, was very disappointed in this for obvious reasons.
Because what was the song?
Hmm?
What was the song that they switched it to?
Oh, I don't see. That's the thing. It's like nobody remembers the song they switched it to for like one season.
Was it the Verve Freshman? You know that song?
I can't remember it. I know it.
Yeah, I love that song.
Was it Swing Low, Sweet Chariot?
It was not Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Oh. Does anybody remember that Verve song that was so popular? Was
Verve? It?
Yeah, was the Verve?
The Freshman, that was the song.
Oh. That's Verve Pipe.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, Verve Pipe. Yeah, I don't know that song.
What's My Age Again?
No, it's not What's My Age Again.
Was it The Drugs Don't Work?
If anybody knows, call in. We will take your calls. We'll accept your suggestions of what the song was if you know. That's a good bit of a little trivia there. But I wanted to finish up with Charlotte Bronte about, so you have dozens and dozens of siblings. They're all dying because you're being forced to eat awful things in these stage shows.
Yes.
You managed to live until you're 38, of course.
Mm.
And so did you die of tuberculosis, or was it another eating mishap or something else entirely?
So I woke up late in the night and I was sobbing as I do over my fallen dead ones. And I thought,
or just eerie.
I just wanted to feel like I was with them again, really.
Mm.
So I took out my husband's toolbox. He had a great big one. And I just started eating the tools.
Oh, for like memories, like nostalgia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was really beautiful, actually.
And then one of those things that you ate was your demise, unfortunately.
Well, Yes and no. What really happened was my husband came down the stairs and he was like, "What you doing?" And I went to answer him as I was swallowing a screwdriver.
Oh, was your husband a chimney sweep?
Yes. Yes, he was.
I believe so.
Yeah. Yes, he's like, "What you doing?" And he used to call me Mary Poppins.
And so you're eating the screwdriver.
I was eating a screwdriver. Which, it went down the wrong pipe.
Oh, no. Mm. You're a professional. Mm-hmm. You've done this 1,000 mm-hmm. times.
You took me by surprise.
The only reason why you died is because your husband asked you, mm-hmm. "What are you doing while you're in the process of eating a screwdriver?"
Yes, and I was trained to answer someone when they ask you a question, so mm-hmm. I had to respond.
Was that? I mean, that's just like something that was, of the time, that was something they forced every woman to do, right?
Yes,
like,
you had to, you right away, drop whatever you were doing. You could be mid-childbirth, and if someone asked you, "What is 2 + 4? You had to answer, and correctly.
Oh, mm-hmm. that sounds good. That's like,
that sounds that, good?
That's kind of like how, that's kind of like how I when I directed movies. That's the kind of attention that I required. Mm, you know,
I understand.
I got a question for Charlotte.
Oh, before
here.
You ask this question, if you're just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are 20th century American film director and screenwriter Stanley Kubrick.
Hey, it's your friend Stanley Kubrick,
and 19th century English novelist and poet Charlotte Bronte.
Hello.
Now, what was your question going to be, Stanley?
Well, I was, you know, you said that your husband, the chimney sweep, he used to call you Mary Poppins, and I was like, oh, is this a weird, you know, like
was it a sex thing?
A little sexy thing? Because, you know, I made a movies about sexy things, and I'm just wondering if
no, we never had sex.
Wow,
me and my husband.
You never had sex?
No, is it no? Huh. I didn't want to. It wasn't a fun. It's not fun.
Sex isn't fun.
No, who
did you die a virgin, Charlotte Bronte, or had you had sex and you knew you didn't like it, and so you told your husband?
I just assumed it wasn't fun.
You just assumed because
nothing
it
else I had done at that point had been enjoyable.
Mm. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. Talk about multiple, an Eyes Wide Shut. Mm-hmm. The sex scene with Tom Cruise and Nicole, I had to cut that because Tom Cruise
is short.
He's very tight. He's a tiny man. No stamina. He really...
No stamina.
Yeah, he would dump real quick.
He would dump real quick?
Yeah, he would. He would scream out.
Tom Cruise. You're trying to film a sex scene. And obviously, you need him erect for this because obviously his shot's not going
to
work.
It's very important when, to me at least, when I was making that movie that I wanted him, I was like, I really want you to feel like you're in this sex party. Yeah. So everybody should be having like Caligula like sex on. He would be a couple of pushes in there and he'd be like, mm hmm.
The noise Tom Cruise made when he finished.
Yeah, just a little peek behind.
Like a sassy waitress.
Mm-hmm. He would say, mm-hmm, and then he would do 2 quick snaps with his finger, and then he would be, he'd go to the trailer and take a little nap.
And then he dumps, as you so eloquently put it.
That's movie talk. That's how you talk in the movies.
Let's go back to Stanley Kubrick for just a moment here. So you were born and raised in New York. You went to public school in the Bronx.
Yeah, PS 123.
Your IQ was tested when you were 10 years old, and you were found to have above average intelligence, but your attendance at school was abysmal. You ditched school 56 days in your first term alone. So this was 1938. You're 10 years old. What were you doing instead of going to school?
I tell you what I wasn't doing. If anybody asked, I was definitely not trying to heat up water and drink it.
Because I don't understand what this fascination is.
Have you never had tea before?
Yeah. What is the problem with heated water,
of
Stanley Kubrick?
Of all the many things that can kill you.
Yes.
Yeah,
of which Charlotte Bronte is unfortunately very well acquainted.
Very well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just saying, it's another thing to watch out for. You know, sometimes somebody puts a little... a little thermos on a table, and you're thinking, "Oh, I'm so thirsty! Can't wait to have a cool sip of some water."
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, some scalding.
It turns out it's hot water, and oh boy!
Not just lukewarm; it's just real hot.
Is your tongue a little uncomfortable for a couple hours?
Oh, it hurts. My dad said it could kill you.
It's not that big. Hypothetically,
that's how my grandpa died. My grandpa died because he was drinking hot waters.
He's drinking hot waters.
Yeah, then he tried to give my grandma a French kiss, and she died because he transferred over some hot water
over there
into her mouth. So it's real tragic.
I didn't realize.
Loved ones died from mouth related injuries.
Wow. Yeah,
that's right.
Well,
you had also said that in your quote in the Wikipedia saying that the school that you went to, you and your siblings went to, was kept in such poor maintenance that was the reason why so many of your siblings had died. Also, like, maybe there was, you know, it was too drafty or too wet, you know,
it
was easy to get illnesses that way.
Well, because it was drafty and wet, you can imagine that any of the metal things we were instructed to eat were rusty or you know, in disarray.
See, it's a delicate
you really
web
there.
Do you have a favorite? What was your favorite?
Your favorite thing to eat, or favorite?
What was your favorite metal? What did you have, like a, you know, a screwdriver?
Brushed steel was a little easier on the...
Brushed steel. I can see that. That seems a little easier to eat.
It's just a little smoother.
Goes down easy. Mm. So yeah, you're saying you don't drink hot water. Don't drink hot water. So when you were a kid ditching school all the time, what was it that you were getting into? What was it that you needed to get away from school to go do at 10 years old?
Oh, you know, I was making movies.
You were making movies?
Yeah, I had a little...
At 10 years old.
I used to take, the paper towel. Paper towel roll, put a little dryer sheet on top of it, rubber band, and then that was my cameras.
That was your camera?
And I would
okay.
Walk into anywhere I could go. I would just go in and be like, I'm filming, I got this on films. And, you know, wherever that took me, supermarkets, sometimes I'd go into subways, you know, girls' locker room. I was just filming anything I can get.
And I'm sure everybody was fine with it because obviously that film isn't being caught anywhere. So you could film whatever you wanted and people would be like, wink, wink, okay, that's adorable, Stanley Kubrick. Well, get out of here with your fake little cardboard camera.
Then I would go home and then I would write it out.
And you'd write out what happened.
Yeah, then I would write out exactly what happened. And then I would, I would ditch school, and then I would go to a street corner, and I would just stand on a little soapbox, and I would just read.
I would
read out my movies.
It must have been wonderful to read and write in public and not have a man come up to you and tell you to stop.
Oh, it was a real joy. One of the real joys of my life.
Was that some of your early experiences as a writer, Charlotte Bronte? You would try to do it in public, and a man would just come up to you and say, stop that?
In public, or, you know, in my chambers, or... Really, anywhere, you know, if a man would come up to me and see me doing it, he'd say, stop that.
Yeah, that's real royalty. Like, a king would do that.
Yeah. Well, no, back then, any man could tell a woman just to stop whatever she was doing.
And if he asked you a question, you had to stop it and answer his question.
Oh, that's tragic. Mm-hmm. That's real tragic.
Yeah. So did you have any strategies? Because I know that you and your sisters would write quite a bit. Mm. And in fact, you guys had a little magazine that you sort of published in your house called Branwell's Blackwood Magazine, where you created imaginary kingdoms and you would make up tales from the imaginary lands of Angria and Gondal. And so you guys are all writing these stories in this home published magazine. How was it that you were all able to get this writing done if at any moment... a man could and at sometimes would burst in and just say, stop that, women, stop writing.
Well, and I'm going to ask the Lord's forgiveness here because it was deceit, but we would take some of the beards from the circus because there was obviously a box of beards.
Of course. It's a circus.
It's a circus.
Yeah.
And so we would put on the beards and we would pretend to be gentlemen.
Oh, wow.
And it was deceitful and wicked, and it's probably why most of us died horrible deaths.
Oh, this really, I swear, your life sounds so much like Eyes Wide Shut to me.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of dressing up.
Stanley Kubrick, have you seen Eyes Wide Shut?
I saw the dailies.
Okay.
You know, I would see it, and I was like, this is good enough.
All right, that's fair. No, I don't
this
think
is good.
So Charlotte Bronte, you're saying that because you and your sisters would put on beards and pretend to be men so you could get your writing done, that God punished you by killing off everybody that you knew and loved, including family and friends.
Well, I really only eluded death once I stopped the charade and really was writing under my name as a woman.
Oh, so it was almost like Final Destination, like you were constantly dodging death. Until you took the beard off? Is that what you're saying?
I can only imagine that it was right around the corner at every turn.
Oh, I see.
But yes, you know, my sisters, they had male personas that they wrote under. And it wasn't until years later where everyone was like, okay, they're dead now. We can say they were women.
Okay. You know, we're going to have to take a break very shortly. But I wanted to ask you, besides wearing the beards, were there anything that you... and your sister did to, besides, of course, you had your pseudonyms, of course. But besides the pseudonyms and the beards, were there mannerisms or behavior that you and your sister would do in order to sell the idea that you were these male writers and that you could get away with continuing to write your stories.
Mm, yes, we would ask questions like a man. Mm. So if a man came up to us and said, "What are you doing there, woman with a beard?" I would say, "Do you know the speed?"
Question.
At which-
I'm sorry. They would walk up to you and say, "Excuse me, woman with a beard?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay. And we had to disarm them with our mm-hmm. quick wits, and so we would ask them interesting questions, and they couldn't help but answer because mm-hmm. they wanted to prove that they knew a lot. You know, you
what was the
be
question
shown...
you were about to tell us about?
Oh, do you know the speed of the prayer of a righteous man?
The speed of the prayer of a righteous man?
Yes, because a righteous man can pray very quickly.
Of course. It's true.
That's how they bless the movies.
That's how they get their prayers up to heaven so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that the men were so stunned by these questions
yes.
and it was a challenge to their masculinity to know the answer.
Their masculinity and their piety in that particular case.
Of course.
Because, you know, if you answered incorrectly, that just... goes to show you were a slow prayer.
Of course. So you're saying that that was the way that you were able to transform yourselves from just being obviously women wearing beards doing writings
yes.
into actual men to deceive them.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Unfortunately, we've got to take a short break, but we'll be right back with Charlotte Bronte
Hi.
And Stanley Kubrick.
Your friend, Stanley Kubrick.
On Famous Dead People. Stay with
famous
us.
Famous Dead People. Famous Dead People.
Hey everybody, just want to take a quick break to remind you to subscribe to Famous Dead People on iTunes or whatever app you are using to listen to podcasts, rate us 5 stars, leave a comment, tell your friends, all that stuff helps us out a ton. And feel free to hit us up at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org if you want a specific famous dead person on the show or if you have any comments that you want to shoot over to us, whatever, we love hearing from fans. Also check out my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. It is out now. It is hilarious. I hope that you will check that out and read that and leave reviews, awesome reviews on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or whatever, and tell your friends to read it because it's super funny and I want that money. Also, go check out JaredBerenstein.com for all the latest on my show dates and up-to-date project information. And lastly, if you really like Famous Dead People and you want to send us some money to help keep the show on the air, go to RadioForBrooklyn.org/FamousDeadPeople and click on the Support the Show button. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn. Famous Dead People, the only show that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I'm your host, Jarrett Berenstein, and we are here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. My guests in the studio today are 20th century American film director and screenwriter known for such works as 2001 and The Shining, Stanley Kubrick.
Hey, it's your friend, Stanley Kubrick.
And 19th century English novelist and poet known for such works as Jane Eyre, Charlotte Bronte.
Hello.
So before we left, we were talking about the way that you and your sisters were getting around being writers.
Yes.
You know, you had your your wickednesses, but you also had your pseudonyms.
Mm.
Your pen name was Currer.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Currer?
Currer. Well, that was how we said Curtis back then.
Curtis. Okay.
So that was a boy's name.
Mm.
That's almost like the, because Jack Nicholson, that was one of his, he would. When he bumps through the door,
he would say,
"Currer."
So that was one of the times?
Yeah, because he was doing animal noises.
And at that point, he was doing animal
and
noises.
And then he said,
what animal
seagull,
makes that noise?
King Currer. Seagull. Matt, I think he said it was a king seagull, which is a large seagull.
Okay. So
it's contrary to popular beliefs. And I told him, I was like, I don't believe you. But he's like, it's not a mythical creature. And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I believe
it's
it.
A big old seagull.
So just to catch everybody up, the different things that Jack Nicholson said while bursting through the door on the set of The Shining, the 3 years it took you to take this one shot, the various
four,
happy days.
It took us 4 years.
4 years?
You said three before.
Yeah, I thought you said 3 years before Stanley Kubrick.
Well, I don't. Zero is the first years. when you're directing a movie, you start at zeros.
It's true. The first year wasn't zero. The first year was one.
Yes.
So you start the century at 2001, or, you know, sorry, the millennia at 2001,
et cetera.
Yeah,
it's real basic stuff. They teach you this in film schools.
Yeah, of course. So 4 years, it was the Happy Days themes. It was Look at Me, I'm a T-Rex. It was Currer, which he said was the sound of a king seagull.
Yeah. Well, he that's what he said. He busted the door and he says, This is the sound that a king seagull makes. And then he said, Kurr. So, and
that
then I
terrifying.
Sat, I, at that
it's
point,
terrifying.
I had to stop him. And I was like, Jack, is this seagull, it speaks English first before it goes into a sound? And then that was like a 6-month delay right there because then we
just come into work and argue with each other.
Yeah, we argue. He retreated back into his trailer. He was like, a different sound before he went through. Not like the Tom Cruise's,
I'm sorry, hold on a second. Famous dead people. This is catchy. Apologies for that little technical issue there. So you were saying that
A lot of stars.
Sometimes Jack Nicholson would climax while he was doing this door shot, and that's how you were able to.
I think this is a terrible thing to talk about.
Get that information.
But, you know, a lot of people, the IMDb's people, they love this stuff.
Yeah, people are fascinated.
They put it in the trivia section, and, you know this. You're an artist. You wrote. You know, I'm sure. What's some trivia that about what your writing process is?
Well, we learned about the fake beards.
Yeah, but like, when you were, like, in the midst, when you wrote a sentence, did somebody ever say, hey, Charlotte, you want some orange juice?
But I would thank the Lord first if it was good, you know, and second, thank you for sparing me so that I had time to write this.
Mm. So if there was a internet movie database for books under the trivia section, it would be like, after every sentence, Charlotte brought
God.
You.
I would drop to my knees and thank God.
Wow. It's no wonder that you were only able to produce, I think it was 3 books and
three
a collection
books.
Of poetry.
Yeah, I don't know why I get...
So
I,
much
I,
of your time was wasted in praying and thanking God.
I wouldn't say wasted because that's if true. I wasn't thanking God and if I had died, you'd get one book twice.
That's right. You might have died even earlier than 38.
I mightn't have made anything.
Mm. I feel like a lot of people look at Stanley Kubrick as this eccentric director, but I feel like, nothing I'm doing is any different than maybe what you were doing.
Well,
I
mean, eccentric.
Yeah, I mean, what she was doing was to spare her life so that she could continue to create her art.
Well, I think it was eccentric in the sense that I don't think, like, Shakespeare was sitting and praying after every sentence.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
Or asking if somebody could give him some orange juice.
I had him on the show. We didn't talk about that. I feel like he would have brought it up if that was something that he did do. So I think we can assume.
He was praying.
He was praying, too.
Yeah, he was praying.
Mm. So in your view, Charlotte Bronte, a person who lives a certain amount of time only gets there
from praying
mm-hmm. to not die.
If your prayers are good,
that's fair. They have to be good.
Yeah,
prayers,
they have
of course.
To be good.
I never prayed.
So you're saying that your pen name Kerr mm-hmm. was what we now know as Curtis.
Curtis, yes.
Or the sound that a king seagull
yes,
makes,
of course. And Ellis was one of your other sister's pseudonyms. Mm-hmm. Was that just Ellis? You know, or was that another
well,
name that
it
we
was
know?
Actually, Alice, but back. Back then, it was a man's name.
Alice.
So
gotcha.
Alice was a man's name.
Mm, the same though, so like Alice, Lindsay, it
right.
could be a man's name.
Yeah, it's you know? A girl's
Shirley.
Name.
Mm.
And then your third sister, her pseudonym was Acton.
Mm-hmm.
Acton.
Mm-hmm.
Did that come from anywhere?
Acton. That's
Acton.
What I would say. Right before they close the slate, and I'd be like, Acton! And that's how
honestly,
everyone...
Honestly,
and that's
how, what it was.
Really?
Yes. It was... It was a shortened form of acting.
Mm.
Yeah, that's...
which is what you guys were doing
yes.
in the beards to
exactly.
to be men.
It was her way of acknowledging her sin of lies. she was pleading. I'm only acting, Lord. But that was too long for a pseudonym, so it went to Acton.
Mm. I think the Lord appreciates the brevity, definitely.
I think so.
I'm surprised, Stanley Kubrick, you said that you would say Acton before your takes.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that you would say that after the takes, because you would be describing what just happened.
Mm-mm.
You would say,
you gotta get
that
everybody...
was Acton.
No, you got to say it right before so the actors know what they're supposed to do now.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of your early work, Stanley Kubrick. So 1951, you started self-producing short films. You're scrounging together whatever financing you could. I'd like to run through a few of these titles of short films that you made. And if you wouldn't mind telling us what these movies were about
sure,
exactly.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so your short film, Day of the Fight.
Mm. Oh, Day of the Fight. That takes me back. Okay, so... The story behind that one is real simple. Somebody had left a thermos of really hot water on the table.
And we can't have that.
I cannot have that.
Because there's nothing more dangerous, apparently.
My dad was real mad, and he said, "Hey, Mr. Kubrick." And I was like, "You can call me Stanley, Dad." He's like, "Not this time, because I'm mad at you." And he found out that he blamed me for putting the hot water there, and he... you know, it was the same thermos that my grandfather had drank out of earlier that morning, and then he, you know, passed away.
And then kissed his wife, your grandmother.
His dying breath, and she had died. So, yeah, that was what that movie's about. That movie's about...
the day that your father confronted you about having a glass of hot water, a cup of hot water.
That may or may not have led to the deaths
of my grandparents.
Was it the same thermos that killed them?
Yeah. What do you mean? Did you say that I reused the same thermos that
your grandfather drank out of? Was it the same thermos?
That was in the movies?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I couldn't afford new props.
Yeah.
So I had to use what was around me. So that must have been very painful.
Yeah. Was that hard to see the thermos that you had placed on the table that killed your grandparents every day that you were shooting?
No, it was a prop.
See. You had emotionally distanced yourself from it.
Yeah, at that point, you know, once you get behind a camera, which, you know, isn't, you know, you spend your childhood looking through a paper towel tube, mm-hmm. you show you over the camera, you know, everything's a prop at that point.
Everything becomes a prop. What about your film, The Flying Padre?
Oh, that was a good one. That was a good one. So that originally, I had the idea of these cars. And they turn into big old robots.
Okay.
And then they fight other robots. But at the time, everyone's like, "Stanley, you can't. This movie makes no sense. You can't do this movies. Mm. You know, this is."
I can imagine at this time, in our nation's history, it would have been difficult to muster the kind of special effects necessary to make a film like that.
And I was like, "Oh," and I fought them real hard for the short film. I fought them real hard.
Who were you fighting for this?
The studios.
So you were making these short films with the studio.
Well, there's the big Hollywood studios, mm-hmm. and then there's short film studios.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're based out of Omaha.
Omaha, okay.
Yeah, that's Little Hollywood is in Omaha. And... Mm. Anyway, I couldn't make this movie with the car, so I decided to make one about a priest that could fly.
Okay, so you were going to make movies about cars that turned into giant robots and fought other robots.
But then this one, he's a priest, he opens up an umbrella, and he just...
And he flies around in his umbrella.
Yeah, he flies around.
Oh, not unlike Mary Poppins.
Yeah, that's my nickname.
Cute nickname that's that your husband
my
gave to you.
Nickname. Yeah. I wrote a story...
Weird that I'm putting that together now and not earlier.
I wrote a story about... robots, actually.
Oh, really?
They just never got published.
Oh,
can we hear?
What happened in the story, Charlotte Bronte?
Well, I didn't get far in it because it made me very sad, but it was a story about metal children that couldn't die.
Oh, you know, I can see the connection there because it's like you, all of your friends and family members died from
horribly.
Eating metal.
Yes.
And so you're like, but if only we were made of metal, then we wouldn't have died doing this.
Exactly. I really made it hard for myself to get through that one.
Mm,
it was just a little too on the nose.
Yeah. Mm. Now, here's the thing, and this could have been a really good twist for that story, is, you know, these kids are now made of metal so they can eat the metal, mm-hmm. but maybe that's not a good show anymore.
Case like cannibalism.
No, right, exactly.
That's not where I was going with it. That's good.
He's right, though. It felt a special sort of sin, a real abomination.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah.
So that's where that would have eventually gone if you'd been able to finish it.
I start every book with a story tree where I have a little tree of all the branches where the story could go, and every single branch ended in cannibalism.
Mm. Oh, children. Fun.
That was my original ending for AI too.
Was cannibalism?
Cannibalism, yeah.
Would the robots eat humans or they eat each other?
Well, I wanted the little robot boy to eat that little robot bear. I thought that was a good ending for that movie. And then the little children would pop up and they'd hold the credits up and they would say AI.
They would say AI?
Yeah, that was the credit, you know? AI, the little orphan children. I would, this time
you
they
only
were.
I needed two.
Hmm?
You would have only needed two.
Oh, but these letters were really big, and I was dropping them from the buildings, and mm-hmm. so the kids had to jump from a window and catch the letters before
that's
they
impossible.
Hit the ground.
No,
that's what that. No, you sound like lie. You sound like the studio execs in
well,
Omaha.
They were trying to
silence Stanley Kubrick back then, but I was like, oh, no, I gotta make.
They were trying to silence.
I gotta go to Hollywood where they where real creators go and the real visionaries and where everyone loves you.
Wait, so AI was made in Omaha.
No. I said you sound like the people that tried to shut me down when I was trying to make my robot movies.
I think that's a horrible thing that you made children jump from buildings.
I agree with Charlotte Bronte. I don't think you should have done that.
I mean, you know, this is what you got to do for the art. How else are you supposed to, because, you know, how else are you going to get scrolling text if you're not just dropping letters from buildings?
You could have moved.
Nobody's mad at George Lucas for when he shot those children in space and had the letters from Star Wars. Oh,
that's right.
Outwards.
How else was he supposed to do the Star Wars lettering?
Yeah, but then, you know, bad guy Stanley Kubrick's here, and I'm everyone's friends.
That's true. You know, it's always the filmmaker right in front of us that we end up getting mad at, when it's really
true.
All of them.
It's very true. I would be just as mad at George Lucas if I had known he shot children into space.
Mm-hmm. And that's even worse.
Yeah, everybody. You name a filmmaker and they've shot children into space.
Every director that I used to hang out with. And even now when I hang out with Brett Ratner's, Mick G's.
Brett Ratner, I 100% believe, shoots children into space. That is not where you should have gone.
Yeah. No,
Brett if you can believe it.
He's not an example I would follow.
Tell me Mick G didn't
Mick G did.
Shoot children into space.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Let's go back to Charlotte Bronte for just a moment. So you wrote a lot of poems throughout your adolescence. Mm. In 1836, you're 20 years old. You reached out to a poet laureate named Robert Southey.
Mm-hmm.
Southey or Southney, I forget, but it doesn't matter.
Acton!
You sent him some of your poems, and you asked him in your letter for encouragement. Mm. And I found it surprising. The Wikipedia says that he wrote back and told you in his letter back to you that you were a bad poet and should consider another career. Is that right?
Yes. Well, first of all, it came to that, but really what the letter said is, it was just a few words, and it said, why aren't you praying?
Why aren't you praying? So he didn't actually say, don't be a poet, but it was sort of like the subtext.
But that's what it was. I sent him poems. Gotcha. You know, if I had sent him a basket of cookies I'd baked and he said, why aren't you praying? I'd say, oh, I shouldn't be baking. Mm. I should be praying.
See, this is where an internet movie database for books would have been helpful, because had he looked at it, he would have known that all you do is praise.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Yeah,
well,
a person can pray and write. We have learned today.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It just takes time.
Yeah. So if you had maybe written him just prayers that you had written, or if you'd said, he instead of poems, you'd be like, here are some prayers that I wrote, what do you think about these, maybe his letter wouldn't have been so severe.
It's true.
Did you ever write him back? Sorry to interrupt.
No, I did. Well, no, I sent him a copy of my favorite Bible. And that was really more of a sign off, more of a like, sorry.
What's your favorite prayers?
My favorite prayer?
Yeah, what's it?
How could I choose? Let me think.
You had a favorite metal that you ate, so you must have a favorite prayer.
No, I have one. It's the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep prayer.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I pray the Lord my soul to keep, and if I die before I wake, I will meet my brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I guess you don't really hear the ending of that one too often. You always hear the beginning of that one. But not really. Yeah, okay.
If you're just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are 19th century English novelist and poet Charlotte Bronte.
Hello.
And 20th century American film director and screenwriter Stanley Kubrick.
Hey, everybody. It's your friend, Stanley Kubrick's.
Now, let's go back to Stanley Kubrick for just a moment. So you had a lot of success with one of your early features, Paths of Glory, with Kirk Douglas.
Douglas.
You started getting offers to direct. Marlon Brando reached out to you to help adapt a Western called The Authentic Death of Hendry Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Which would later be renamed to One-Eyed Jax, of course. Now, you and Brando worked on the script for 6 months, and in the end, you left the project, and Brando made the film himself because of, quote, many disputes broke out over the project.
Oh, yeah.
But the Wikipedia is pretty vague about what that is. Can you describe these disputes that you had with Marlon Brando?
Oh, yeah, it was huge. Okay, first of all, you know Marlon Brando lives on that island, right?
Was he living on the island at the time?
Yeah, and he makes you swims out there.
He makes you swim.
And you can't take a boat to the island. He wants, because he's like, yo, if you're dedicated, I want you to swim out there. And, you know, he stands on the shore, because you can see it. You can see this from the shore, and he's just dumping sharks.
So Marlon Brando.
You use the word dump.
Yeah, but this is
a
different kind of dump. This isn't like a Tom Cruise.
I just wanted to make
this
sure.
This is Tom Cruise doing a little dump and his wife.
We're not talking about Marlon Brando coming sharks into the ocean.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Marlon Brando is not, you know, yeah, what Jared said. Yeah. He's stone sharks and stuff, and you're swimming out there, and by the time I got there, I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And you're dodging sharks.
And I'm dodging sharks.
It's unnecessary.
And, you know, we're sitting there, and, you know, we break bread, and, you know the documentary that he did later on, The Island of Dr. Moreau?
I didn't know that was a documentary.
No, yeah, 100% that was a documentary.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's very much what it's like to hang out with Marlon Brando.
So Marlon Brando's on this island where
he's got a bunch of people.
That he is mutating with.
Half humans, half animals, and a little tiny man that hangs out with him.
Of course.
And there was just, it wasn't pleasant, you know.
That is just
like the circus.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what?
It sounds like the circus. It's
very much like the circus because, you know, that's what they did for entertainment. They did a bunch of tricks, a lot of trapeze, peanuts, cracker jacks.
Mm. What religious lessons were they supposed to be teaching people with trampolines and cracker jacks?
Oh, that was just for fun. Marlon Brando, he's an eccentric individual. He used to just sit there. He'd have a big old bucket of red wines, and he would just be drinking it, and he was just barking out orders.
I guess this wasn't one of those religious circuses like you were in.
No.
It's a corruption.
Mm.
Yeah.
Were there any other stars or famous directors that you were supposed to be paired with on projects, but that you ended up having disputes with and then had to cancel those projects?
Well, yeah, there was a couple of, you know, I was supposed to work with Vanna White.
With Vanna White?
Yeah, I was going to do a story about...
The woman who turned the letters on Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune. She's still doing it. She's still doing it. God bless her soul. She's still doing it. She's a good prayer. Well, but you know, she's not even turning them now. Now she just walks over and touches them. You know, I guess...
They have little iPads now.
Yeah, they have little iPads. Mm-hmm. I was going to work with her. I was going to do a little documentary on her. And she didn't like it. She didn't like my idea for...
Well, what were your ideas?
Well, I really wanted... I was still working on Eyes Wide Shut at the time. So all I was thinking about was, you know, sex stuff.
Mm.
So for me, okay. I was like, hey, how about we do me... You, camera, some letters.
That sounds horrible.
But she, you know, she did not, you know, it
Stanley
never got
Kubrick.
Made. It
Stanley
never
Kubrick.
Got made.
It sounds like this documentary that you were going to make with Vanna White.
No, it wasn't a documentary, just work of fiction.
So this work of fiction was going to be just you having sex with Vanna White. Is that not the case?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And Vanna White said no.
She said no, and I was like, okay. So and I dropped the matter.
You're throwing this in the category of a dispute that you had with somebody, a creative dispute.
Mark my words,
She was on board with everything, but she just wanted more people in the room to watch. And I was like,
oh, really?
Yeah, then I was like, this is a private affair.
So she was like, no, maybe if you get a whole bunch of people.
If you get a bunch of people.
Is that where the idea for Eyes Wide Shut came
from? As I said, a lot of it. I was working on Eyes, because originally Eyes Wide Shut was very different.
Ooh, what was the original Eyes Wide Shut
like? So the original Eyes Wide Shut was Tom Cruise's character, high-powered businessman. He's got a busy day at work. He's stressed out. Then he comes home. He sees his wife, gives a kiss on the cheek, and he goes to bed and he takes a nap.
Oh, I love that.
And it's in real time. It's 4.5 hours.
Okay.
And
I love that.
It was going to be, for me.
Sounds like classic Kubrick.
It was going to be a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was my life. You know, that was my home life with my husband.
Mm, that does sound really nice.
It was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that used to call you Mary Poppins.
I only had one.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I must be thinking of
someone. That question is offensive, Stanley Kubrick. How dare you?
I can't. Oh, wow. Sorry. That it was the my entire. Whatever I was saying earlier, that was the thing that offended
That was the
me.
Thing.
I can't save you, but I can save my own story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
Yes. Ooh, that's a classic
really
Bronte
good.
Right there. I
yeah.
like that.
Yes.
Now, we are quickly running out of time. So let me finish up by asking you, Charlotte Bronte, about your famous book, Jane Eyre. So, 1847. You send in the manuscript for Jane Eyre under your male pseudonym of Currer.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks later, it is published. It becomes a sensation. One of the innovations of the book, for the time, of course, being that it was written from the first person's perspective of a woman.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So would you be able to describe like the general reaction to that innovation? This is a world where art is never told from the perspective of a woman, and suddenly there's this whole wonderful book.
Thank you.
How did people respond to that?
A lot of men asked it questions.
They asked
to try
the book
and shut her up. They tried to get her to stop talking, and I was like, it's written already. You can't stop it. It's there.
So these men
were going to keep talking.
These men were opening up the book. Mm-hmm. They were seeing that it was a woman narrator,
yes.
And they were saying what to the book?
As soon as they would catch on that it was a woman, they would say,
What did you write to make it clear that it was a woman speaking?
It said, hi, my name is Jane Eyre.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a woman.
But Jane is, like you said, Lindsay, Shirley, it could be a guy's name.
No, what? Well, the full first line of the story is, hello, my name is Jane Eyre, I'm a woman, and I'm here to tell you the story of my woman life.
Yeah, well, I can see how it could be a little ambiguous.
Yeah, that kind of tips you off, I think.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, what were some of the things that the men would say to the book to try to get to shut up?
Oh, they would really throw questions at her. They would say, what's your favorite story? And then they would realize that was inviting a conversation, so they would change that to, what are three things about horses that you don't think I know? And that was a trap because...
Was that a... Whoa, that was a bit... That a question that people threw
to trick
people
up? That was a common one.
Now, if I...
What's the answer?
Oh, what is the answer?
Well, it changed from person to person.
Oh, that's right.
So horses, they fight with mirrors. You know, they fight reflections of themselves. And they love classical chamber music.
Mm, okay.
And they actually don't like carrots. And the reason you can get a horse to run by dangling a carrot in front of it is so it can fight the carrot.
Oh, because they hate the carrots.
They want to fight the carrots. The carrots remind them of their reflections.
Now, when you were writing and a man would catch you writing, they would just say, stop that sometimes. Did men sometimes just yell, stop that into their book?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Interesting.
And if they got very cross, they would make the book pray.
I see. That is very interesting. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week's episode of Famous Dead People. I'd like to thank my guests, Stanley Kubrick and Charlotte Bronte, for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you.
My last question I always ask, I know it's a little weird, but do either of you have any like comedy shows or Twitter accounts that you're really big fans of that you just want to tell people about? Stanley Kubrick, anything you want to tell people about?
Yeah, you can catch one of my favorite improv teams at the Magnet Theater in New York City every Wednesday at 8. Team's name is Metal Boy. Also, I'm really getting into this YouTube series. Pat May plays video games and does improv. You can see that at Video Games Improv.
Yep, sounds wonderful. Come check that out. And Charlotte Bronte, anything you want to tell people about?
Yes, I like a woman named Carly Minardo. She's an artist, and she writes on Twitter at Whirring Blender, and you can tell that she prays.
And you can tell that she prays, so you know she's a good woman. I, of course, am your host, Jarrett Berenstein. You can check out all my stuff at jarrettberenstein.com. You can go and buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. It is out now, and it is hilarious. I would love it if you are listening to this on the radio, you find the podcast version of Famous Dead People, and you can listen to all the old episodes. You can rate, you can subscribe, you can tell all your friends about it. Also, you got to come check out my improv team, Junior Varsity. We are retiring at the end of January 2019. So if you want to come check out one of our last shows, that will be every Thursday at 7 p.m. in January at the Magnet Theater. If you have any questions that you want to ask your favorite dead person, please email it to us at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org. We will try to have them on as soon as we can. We are here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Famous dead people, famous dead people.